irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
That's how I'm feeling today.
Elephant.
I'm feeling trunky.
I let the intro music go for a while.
I know. I like that.
We got some time to kill.
Let it just like chill. Our guest is running a little bit late.
We have time to burn.
So how was your week, Eddie?
I'm tired. It's good.
It's a way to start the show with a yawn.
You know what? You have some crazy hours. You wake up at 6 every day, right?
7. I got to get to school.
So what time do you go to bed?
Most of America wakes up. Around
that
time.
That's true. Actually, you know what? I stay up super late. Like, I'll practice
so
at 3 in the morning.
I stay up till 3
so
or 4.
So how do you get up and then...
I don't sleep much. Sucks. Sucks balls.
Well, is that parenthood or is that just because you've always been like that?
No, I would... Before a kid, I slept till 11.
I'm better boy.
But you can't do that when you have a kid. You gotta get up.
I know.
It sucks balls.
Does he wake up early on Saturday morning cartoon?
No.
No?
No.
He sleeps in?
Yeah.
You're teaching him Jawes? I saw you guys went to bingo. He was calling out the numbers.
We called bingo Sunday night at the Founders Ale House on Pico Boulevard.
That's
every
awesome.
Every Sunday night, come on down. I call bingo.
So does he plays?
No, he was...
He just called the numbers?
Tracy had something else she had to do, so I had Colton, and so I had to bring him with me. And he wanted to help call bingo, so we called bingo.
I check out all your Facebook posts. I saw your the butt crack outside of your...
Oh, that was window. Lovely. That was super lovely.
Are they doing work on your place? Or
no, there's an apartment next to us.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Living the dream.
It's funny. I was watching the Money Pit, the Tom Hanks movie, The Money Pit.
I love that movie.
And
2 weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks. And then we ask the guy, the butt crack guy, after we took the picture, Tracy went out there and he's like, so how much longer do you guys think you're going to be? And what do you think
he
says? 2 weeks. 2 weeks.
It's like they're instructed to say
they know
that.
What to say. 2 weeks.
You know what's amazing is for everybody that's getting, you know, construction on their houses, you know, I know there's like a little bit of leeway, but man, their scales are so off on their time. Like always. Like, if it takes 3 weeks, it'll probably take 7 or 8.
Yeah.
It's just how it is. But, you know?
Yeah, whatever.
So, I heard you talking about Guardians of the Galaxy. Let's talk a little smack.
Did you see it?
I did. I saw it this weekend. I was super disappointed.
Yeah, I wasn't super jazzed about it.
I was hoping it'd be awesome because the first one's actually really good.
I love the first one. I thought the first one was great.
Me
I
too.
Saw the first one, like, 3 times in the theater.
You think they just rushed the movie and just made a shit movie?
I don't think they rushed it. I don't know what they did.
You know, it's like...
It just felt... It
wasn't executed at all.
Well, they tried to give it... I mean, I thought some of the dialogue was fun. There was some funny dialogue. I'll give that. There was some funny stuff.
My favorite scene was that whole Pac-Man thing. That was the best part of the whole thing.
Yeah, it was okay. And no, I mean, I like some of the dialogue. It just felt like they tried to give everybody too much.
Right.
And it just like,
well, let me ask
it
you this.
Gummed up the movie. It just slowed
down
the movie.
What do you think worked for the first one so well?
It just hit the ground running. You know, you were just like from the moment the kid got abducted. I mean, like the moment he goes into that thing, puts on the headphones, starts dancing, and then finds the orb. I mean, it just goes.
Yep.
From the beginning.
Yep, I agree.
And I don't know. It was just exciting to watch. And this one was just sort of like, I think it tried to do that, but then they kept trying. There was so much exposition to try to just explain everybody's purpose, and then that whole scene with
Kurt Russell
and him and Chris Pratt, and they're doing the.
The plan, like catch.
Well, no, when they're doing not the, I mean, the catch thing was like goofy
that,
and
that
like
was so that was so.
It was dumb, but it was. I think it was meant to be. It was meant to be that way.
No, of course, but it was just like, dude.
But like
are
the whole
me?
The whole thing where he's like walking around the hall and he's explaining the history of like how he. I'm like, I don't need to know of this. This is all boring exposition.
It's all CGI.
That you could have really said, and like we already knew that he went to Earth and fell in love with or got. You know, his mom pregnant. We already knew all that. Like, why regurgitate that information?
Right.
So it was like this, like, 10-minute scene in the middle of the movie. You're just like, I know all this. This is just...
You know, I'm amazed that some of these movies get made with the budgets that they have. And it's like, how do they... I'm like...
Well, I understand why they got made, because Guardians was a huge
Guardians
success.
Guardians is great.
It was a huge success.
How could they have read that script and been like, yep,
once you
great.
Make a movie that gets, like, the hit like Guardians did, you know, you're going to get... carte blanche on the next one.
Yeah, so you
that's what's got worried. That's why it has me worried about Deadpool. Because Deadpool is such a huge success.
And the director's off the movie. Right?
The director's off the movie. Deadpool is such a huge success. And they did everything so small. Like everything was small. Like, even like the... It was a love story. Basically, Deadpool's a love story. Yeah. And like, everything was small, and they kept it character-based, and it was a great movie, and it was fun. And I'm just afraid that they're just going to turn the next one into something bigger than it should be.
You think they just do that just to make money?
Well, because I think what they do is all these superhero movies, everything is like every bad guy at the end of the movie, everything becomes like an extinction level event.
Right.
Like everything. Like Suicide Squad. If Suicide Squad had did what Deadpool had done and just kept everything small and character based, because you have great characters in the Suicide Squad, and just keep the threat local and small and make it about the characters, then great. But why does it have to be an extinction level event to the Earth? Where Suicide Squad has to save the Earth, and then the whole time you're going, "Where's Batman? Why wouldn't Batman show up?"
I haven't even seen that because I heard it.
But it's just like it's the same thing. And then, like this one was like Guardians, like this ego guy is trying to take over the universe, and like you start seeing it pop up all over the big mounds of whatever come out on. Like why aren't the Avengers involved at this point? It's threatening the whole universe. It's just like why does everything have to be extinction level? Just make it.
Base
it around the characters and keep it small.
Because they're trying to do too much.
I think it's just the blockbuster formula of like, okay, this is.
Yeah, but why would they not just say this worked? This formula worked. Let's do it.
I mean,
again.
I understand Guardians of the Galaxy. They're supposed to guard and protect the whole galaxy, so it should be big events, and they save the galaxy like they saved the galaxy the first time. But I don't know.
I honestly think they could have made the whole movie about the premise in the intro. You know, they're hired to basically... They could have made the whole movie.
Well, I think that's... Obviously, that's leading into the third one, if you saw the end.
Yeah.
With Adam being created or whatever. But just... I mean... Like, the beginning of the movie was just a setup for the third movie.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the movie was about...
It was very disjointed. I just thought... I was just disappointed because it's like I find that... Anytime Hollywood does something right, they make sure to mess it up the second.
Well, like, everyone loved the dancing, like, baby Groot at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy was in the pot. So they're like, what do we do now? Let's just give everyone as much dancing baby Groot as we can.
I liked the opening sequence. I thought that was fun.
That was... No, I hated that.
So you didn't like the dancing Groot at all? But just to open the scene.
I didn't like the dancing part. I just, like, from that... As soon as that happened, like, oh, this is what this movie's going to be.
Right. No, I could see that. I didn't mind that.
I saw Dancing Groot at the beginning, at the end of the first Guardians. And then the little baby Groot thing is funny, and there were some funny scenes between him and Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah,
but like, I was just like, it's like, oh, baby Groot's testing really well. Let's put him in as many scenes as possible. That's what it felt like. I was like, okay.
Yeah. But you know what? It's like, why do you think, what's behind that? That's
marketing. What sells?
But why market something shitty?
They don't know it's shitty until it goes out.
Oh, they come on. Do you think any executive watched that movie and is like, this is better than the first?
Yeah, they all convince themselves.
Really?
Yeah.
You think so?
They all do. If you're involved in it, yeah.
That's crazy to me. Yeah, you know, I find that with artists, you know, even in music, like they'll make a great record and then they'll come out with something that's like very bad for the next one. And usually the next record is, you know, pretty good or it's terrible.
I mean, you can create something and work super hard at it and it still not be good.
Yes.
Effort doesn't always equal success.
No, I understand that. But I mean, that movie was, I was like, how could they make this after making Guardians? You know what the best part of that movie was? The Star Wars trailer.
The Star Wars trailer was good.
Yeah, the Star Wars trailer looked real good.
There's a couple good trailers. I forgot what they were. But
so that wasn't, I wasn't expecting that. Did you know that was coming?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't.
I'd already seen the trailer.
I'd never
seen it. It's been out for like a month.
I didn't know.
It came out in April.
No, I didn't know.
Do you not go on the internet?
I mean, I do, but I just.
All over the internet.
I'm a huge Star Wars fan.
For a month.
Man, I unless people post it on Facebook or.
It was on Facebook. It was all over Facebook.
I didn't see it on Facebook.
Oh, my God.
I know. I'm out to lunch. But I've been on Facebook a little less, just doing sessions, man. I'm just working. But, yeah, I was a little disappointed. And, you know, watching something like that where you're already a fan of the first one and then you see something, you know, in the second one. Like, I thought the first one was just amazing. Yeah, I was like, oh, my God.
The first one was just fun.
This
is
a fantastic movie. And then the
second
one, it was just like, oh, man. They really drove this into the ground.
It was just too much. They just tried to pack, I think, too much into one. It was like, it's the same feeling I had after I went and saw Matrix Reloaded, the second Matrix film. Like, yeah, I was so jazzed about it because I love the Matrix, and I saw Reload, and I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, right. But at least I thought the third one was better than the second one.
They were all garbage.
I mean, the first one was the best.
First one was amazing.
But the third one, you didn't think the third one was better than the second one?
No, they're both. It's all the religious imagery and overtone. Like, stop.
I thought you loved that, Eddie. Ugh. What's a trilogy that you just think is unbelievable? That you're just like, this is a really well done.
The original Star Wars trilogy.
Well, yes. I mean,
I have issues with Jedi, but.
Yeah, but you know what? Then they mess it up with 1, 2, and 3. It's like, you know, it's like somebody always messes up something. Even with Indiana Jones, great. And then they do the Crystal Skull, and it was like, what?
Yeah, I don't know. The Crystal Skull thing was.
Oh, so bad.
I understand what they were trying to do because they were trying to put Indiana Jones in the time period that he was. So, like, he couldn't fight Nazis anymore. And then in that time period, what was, like, the 50s or the 60s, it was the nuclear age. So everything had to be about nuclear and, you know, alien. I mean, it was just about, you know, I don't know. There's no excuse. I don't know.
I mean, who do you think, like, do you think it's the writers? Do you think it's the suits? Do you think it's... The actors kind of like...
I mean, every piece of art, every film can't be great, no matter how hard you work at it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's kind of like you think people are just doing it for the money? Like, just straight up?
There's a lot of money involved, so yeah, but no, I don't think they made Kingdom of the Crystal Skull just for money.
Definitely. What was the artistic, you know...
Well, there's no artistic. What was the artistic in Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Well,
there's no artistic.
Story.
They were trying to make a blockbuster film. There was no art. Movie. There was no art in Jaws.
Yeah.
They're just trying to make a blockbuster film. They just, sometimes you do it right.
Well, you'd have a point with Jaws 4 or Jaws 5, you know, but.
The original Jaws, they weren't trying to make art house cinema.
But he's trying to make suspense.
He's meant a suspense summer blockbuster.
And he did it without showing the entire.
That's only because the shark was broken.
Well, but it still made.
Had he got what he wanted, that you would have seen that shark everywhere in the first 10 minutes of the movie. And it would have been there for the rest of the whole movie.
Yeah,
that movie only worked because the shark didn't work.
You think so? You think so? If Spielberg had his way, that movie would have.
He already said it in the documentary. Like, they wanted the shark was not working the whole movie.
Yeah, I remember Richard Dreyfuss was like, "Oh, the shark's
no." That's why they had to cover it up the whole time, and then you see it at the end. You're like, "Oh yeah, okay." But if they had their way, they would. And telling me now, if Spielberg didn't make Jaws, the first Jaws, if he did not make that now, you wouldn't see that huge CGI shark in the first 2 minutes of the opening of the movie. Yes, you would have seen that huge ass shark. There would no way they would have saved that shark for the end of the movie.
So maybe less is more then, because even Spielberg hasn't made, I mean, a terrific movie in quite a while. Mm. You know,
he's making another Indiana Jones, so we'll see what happens. 2020 really? It comes out.
What's it about? Do you know?
I don't know. They haven't got the script yet. I don't think. It's supposed to come out in 2020.
I know you're passionate about film. So it's like when you see something like that where it's just like, you must be constantly disappointed with movies.
I know. I don't get disappointed. I just go in with like low expectations. And then I see something great. Like when I went and saw Guardians for the first time 3 years ago, I went in like, I was like, I'll see what this is about. And I was like, oh, wow, that was great.
And I felt the
same with Iron Man in 2008. I was like, oh, I don't know about Robert Downey Jr. being Tony Stark. And I go in like, wow, that was amazing.
Yeah. That's Jon Favreau, though.
Yeah.
He was an actor, and he made movies. And he's like, he probably was thinking story-based. He's done a lot of great stuff, too. Yeah. Did you see Jungle Book?
I didn't see Jungle Book.
Jungle Book is incredible.
I didn't see it.
It's so well done. And it's crazy because I think Jacob was telling us this, too. But the whole thing was done in a warehouse in downtown L.A. Like, they just rented out a huge warehouse and built, like, the set.
Yeah, they're doing a Lion King
green
now.
Screen. Yeah, yeah. And I'm like excited to see. Is he doing The Lion King?
He might be. He might be doing it.
Yeah, I mean, but you know what? It's like maybe he had the experience of being an actor for so long that he just like wanted more of the control of the story.
I've always liked everything he's directed. He's always been a good director.
Yeah, he's a badass.
Good writer.
Yeah, man. So you think that's where it starts?
Well, it always starts with the script.
Do you think Guardians of the Galaxy 2 could have started out with a better script that just got tweaked, and then somebody in Hollywood just said, "Well, let me get my hands on it." Hey,
you never know. I mean, like, I don't know. You don't know how many cooks get in the kitchen at that point. Something gets that huge, and I mean, it's also part of the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe, so it's got to
tie in.
They have to have. I read something somewhere where like all those movies, they have to fit a certain. There has to be a certain criteria they have to meet on a certain thing, or they can't do certain things because it's everything in the whole story of the whole universe has to sync up at some point. So they can't go outside of certain things. So I mean, there are some.
I was going to ask you if you knew this.
There are some restrictions.
Like Stan Lee's in all these movies, right? Does he get like a huge percentage of all of these movies?
No, I don't know what he still owns with Marvel. I don't know.
Somebody
he
told
sold
me that,
Marvel.
I think my brother told me that he sold it.
He sold Marvel.
So then he wouldn't get any like residual.
I don't know what he gets. I don't know. I mean, I don't think he's hurting for money anyway, but...
I don't think he's hurting for money, but it's just crazy that if you create something like that, why you'd ever want to sell it if you just knew...
Well, I think he sold it before it...
They made all the movies.
Yeah, same with Lucas. Lucas got $4 billion for the Star Wars franchise, but he doesn't get any money now from the new Star Wars
movies. He doesn't get anything?
I don't think so. I think he sold everything.
No, he's
got
to get
He got $4 billion. I don't think Disney's like, here's $4 billion, plus we'll keep paying you.
Well, but 1% or something small like that off...
1% off Star Wars is a lot of money.
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, he created it.
Yeah, but you sold it for $4 billion. Would you sell your entire music library for $4 billion and not ask for anything else in return?
You want to know the truth?
Yeah.
Honestly?
$4 billion.
$4 billion.
But then you start fresh, and then you can create whatever you want, and that's all yours from the end. From there until that... Everything you create up till now... You sell for $4 billion.
I guess...
You don't have any more rights to it.
I'll tell you the truth. This is honestly how I feel, okay? $4 billion is a lot of money. It's a lot of money. Yeah,
but your name is still on it. People still know you wrote it. You still created it. It's still your stuff.
But if somebody made $10 billion off what I created and I never got a percentage of that, that would kind of piss me off. It would kind of make me think, wait, I made this. I should get a residual, a small
fraction. But you got $4 billion.
Yeah, but I mean, buyouts, I don't know. Buyouts, I'm torn. If it was a buyout for something that I didn't care about, sure.
But you're an artist and you keep creating, so it doesn't matter.
But you know what?
You've sold it.
If I put so much blood, sweat, and tears into my albums, and then somebody said, we'll give you $4 billion for it, I mean, that deal would happen.
Yeah, but if you're an artist, you do a painting, you sell a painting, you don't keep getting residuals every time someone else buys that painting.
Well, yeah, you would. You'd get it off of prints. Yeah.
No, if you sell that original piece of artwork,
I'm
someone
sure
buys
Picasso
it,
is getting...
It's gone.
Like,
and then someone turns around and is like, oh, you like this piece of artwork? Yeah, I'll sell it to you for $600.
What about prints? They have to get...
Well, if you're selling it, but you still own it, right? If you're getting a print... But you're also not getting $4 billion for it. I would sell anything for $4 billion.
And never get anything back on the back end.
What more would you want? That's wealth until the end of time for your family.
Well, I mean, that's a lot of money. I mean, let's be honest. That's a lot of money. But you know what? How much did Disney make off the first Star Wars?
Probably $1 billion.
So that's...
Oh, no. It was working out well for Disney. Disney's going to make more. Disney wouldn't have done that deal had they known they're not going to make more than $4 billion off of it.
Exactly. So if they know they're going to make more than $4 billion, then don't you think it would be like, yo, they're going to make so much money that it's not going to matter. You know what I mean? Hey, our guest has arrived. Woo! Hold on. Oh, crickets and the explosion, the yin, the yang.
Yes.
Sergio, how are you, man?
How are you? Nice
good
to
see
meet you finally.
How's it going? We were texting back and forth.
Yes.
You've been waiting for your car all day.
Yeah, you know, I don't think rock stars have pull like they do in Hollywood. So I get up this morning, and I need to get my car towed at 8. Sent me 3.
8?
Yeah, 8 o'clock. Sent me 3 bad tows, right?
Oh.
What?
And then I got my car to the shop at 12, and I tell him, look, I have a radio show to be on tonight. That's, you know, can we expedite this? I've been through quite a headache already. They're like, sure, whatever. They just finished now.
And oh, God.
I just got
12 hours later.
Hollywood Boulevard.
That is crazy.
Yep.
What needed to be fixed?
Oh, I had a ball joint pop out.
Damn.
I have no idea what that is.
Monkeying around over there?
No idea what that is.
Crazy.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm here. Well, I made it. I know you were like, I could read through the
text. Oh, man, I was so pissed because you know what? I was telling Eddie. I was like, last week I had somebody, like an artist flake on the way over.
I'm just like, flake.
And you know what? You know, and I appreciate that you're here.
I will get here, dude. If there's a wreck, I will get here. Limp out of the wreck.
But you know, I was telling you, I'm like, I just don't get that. It's like art to me is about being creative, but it's also about organizing your creative energies, right? Can we all agree on that?
Sure.
Absolutely.
So on some level, you have to be organized. On some level, right?
Yeah.
So
or pay someone to organize for you.
Yeah. But no, but I mean, even as an artist, you have to be organized on some level to create it, right? So it's just like, it just baffles me when it's just like things are all over the place.
Well,
you know?
It's about ethics.
I'm going to have you just get a little closer.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, because I was watching the proximity. I didn't want to over modulate you there. But yeah, it's about... I would say more about work ethic.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of an old school throwback in my generation. Right. I operate more like the Rat Pack, where I shake your hand, I look you in the eye. Yeah. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there. Even if people die, I don't care.
Yeah.
I'll go to the funeral later. A lot of modern guys, they came up in the internet age, so everything's relative.
Right.
So, yeah, you got 5 million followers, but you haven't played a gig. You haven't sold a CD.
Yeah. Isn't
you haven't
crazy?
Been on a magazine. I'm the total opposite. So I built my career in real life. And I put very little stock into social media, though I use it very well.
Right.
So I'm more interested in actually doing stuff.
Well, I like that.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your backgrounds.
Of course.
Eddie is curious. Where are you from?
Where am I from? I'm from Hoboken, New Jersey, and ethnically Cuban and Puerto Rican with some Danish.
Whoa!
So, wow. Yeah.
Your family gets around.
Yeah. Most people think I'm like Native American. Some lady... Oh, yeah. While I was trying to fix my car myself, like a genius, some lady came up to me and she goes... Because I have Florida tax, she goes, "You're far from Seminole country, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm here from some wampum, but I was going to say I'm here for white girls and wampum." But you know, it's kind of touchy. You don't know how these chicks react these days.
Who would say that to somebody?
Racist
far from
people?
Seminole racist country. People. You're far from Jeez, Seminole country,
that's,
boy.
Yeah, you know what? That's America for you.
I'm going to go
in that. We're gonging that.
I'm more of a shticky type of comedy guy, so I don't offend easy,
right?
And I don't mind offending others,
right?
So that kind of rubs people.
So you and Eddie are born from the same.
Yeah, I don't care about being offensive, but I just like some people. Like I would never go up and say that to somebody, but like not because I would. It's like why would I say that?
Yeah,
like you can't offend me. It's impossible to offend me.
I think it was a pickup line.
But
I think she was trying to like say hello, and I'm like that was weird.
But we're glad you made it.
I'm glad. And
looks like he made it. And he's like, I got nothing. Let's talk about Sergio. Let's talk about your music background.
Okay.
So how did you get into playing music? Did you start with guitar?
Yeah, I started with guitar. Surprisingly enough, when I was 4, I knew what I wanted to be.
What?
So I just figured, I don't know how, just watching MTV, I figured out how to play guitar. So I never played until I was 16.
Wow.
But the minute I got a guitar, it sounded like gibberish, but it was super fast and it made sense, right? I learned backwards than anybody else. I learned how to play solos, scales, and then learn chords. So I learned theory like 5 years into
it. How the hell did you do that?
I have no idea. But that's just...
So that's basically learning to run before you can walk.
Yeah. What are these? You know, it's these are feet. Mm-hmm. I've been
that's
using them all.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So, and then when I filled in the theory, then I grew a lot more because I was able to know actually what I was doing. But it was never. It was always more about being a rock star that was good, than being like you know a theoretical genius. You know, but I filled in those gaps and it made me a better player.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
That's. I mean, I've never heard of somebody starting with solos.
Yeah. Exactly. Like kids in because I think I got my first guitar and when Smashing Pumpkins had a Siamese Dream out, like in high school.
Great record.
So everybody was struggling to play like Disarm, and I was playing Cherub Rock by ear. Look, I figured it out. You just put your fingers here, and it does this. And
that
was just me, you know.
No teaching?
No
nothing?
Teaching. I went to one guy that taught me an A chord and a C. I said, no, that's terrible. I don't want to do that. So I just got a Kill 'Em All tab book later. And I was like, you mean these things? Oh, they hurt. No.
Well, if you have to pick a Metallica album, that's the one to do.
That's a good record.
Yeah.
I like Injustice for All, though, too.
That's a great record. Did you hear Injustice for Jason?
No, what's
somebody
that?
Took the tracks and pulled the bass out and put the bass back on top, and it sounds phenomenal.
Really?
Yeah.
Why did they do that?
Because Jason was lost in the mix in the other one.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Really?
And Justice for Jason. Check it out. Newstead, you owe me money.
So did you start in Jersey?
Yeah, started in Jersey. I worked my way up through New York, New Jersey hardcore era, playing metal. A lot of the people I knew were signed. El Nino, I grew up with. Mark from Soulfly. Twisted Sister guys.
Yeah.
Misfits guys. Skid Row guys. I actually got my first songwriting gig with Joe Linterna from Deep Purple.
Wow.
And I was just around all those people. So
Skid Row was like my favorite band when I was in middle school, dude.
Yeah, man. And around
18 and left. 18 and left. You had to love Skid Row. Skid Row was
I was more like Maiden. I love
Maiden. But dude, Skid Row was like the chain from the nose to the ear.
Yeah.
It was more Maiden.
All right.
I'd like pick one and I go hard into that one.
All right.
That's just me.
We're talking about music, right?
Yeah. Maiden.
No. Okay, so keep going. Yeah.
Yeah, so those guys, I learned the work ethic, and I learned that what you see on MTV and what you see in magazines is not real life. A lot of these guys are down to earth. A lot of these guys, I'm not going to name names, but they live paycheck to paycheck just like everybody else. And
wow.
They live in a two-story or one-story, one-family house with a modest life like everyone else. They get paid big money. But then when you got to pay back your record label or the loan you took out for an album or something, it all evens out.
Wow.
So I realized, I'm like, okay. So if you go the way of being a legend, right, which is what I wanted to be. I wanted to be somebody who's known for doing things well. Okay, not necessarily famous, but known
right.
for doing things well.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, well, you can't really expect to get filthy rich. But then I noticed that all the guys that were really clowny and had gimmicks, those were the rich dudes. So the guys without the talent, totally banking because it was all
You mean like Kiss?
No, but you know what? They were brilliant. They saw their weakness. They weren't in their era. They weren't the best technical players. They were
right.
good players. So they decided to come up with a gimmick. And the
gimmick worked.
The gimmick worked.
But Gene Simmons is like a marketing machine.
A marketing machine. And you can't take that away from him.
Yeah.
But I chose the pure musician route.
Yeah.
And I knew what to expect. So I've made business decisions that helped me not fall into that trap. Because I saw these guys are legends. And again, I'm not going to name names, but there were other guys around that core group of guys I mentioned who were, you know, big in the 80s and they were living in a Winnebago or something. And I'm like, how did this happen?
That's crazy.
It's just bad business decisions.
Bad management.
Bad management.
Yeah.
Divorces.
A lot of cocaine.
A lot of drugs. You can't get married three times and divorced three times and expect everything to be okay. So I learned from them. I learned from all their mistakes. So I would ask questions. Hey, well, how did this happen? Well, why do you wind up here? Oh, taking notes. And I avoided that as much as I can. So,
smart.
You know, life happens.
Smart.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's crazy. There's a lot of stories like that.
Yeah.
I won't name who it is, but... A very famous band, a very famous metal band, one of the musicians in the band, a friend of mine told me there was a time in like the 90s, they were getting Grammys or like doing arenas, and he was working for a music manufacturer, like doing rep like for endorsements and stuff. And I was like,
yeah.
Dude, that's I don't understand that. And he's, you know, they were like, well, he's married with kids, and you know, when you're not on the road, I'm like, but you're still making millions, right?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah,
and there's another one who has albums since the '90s that at least have 10 singles per album, making millions of dollars for the label. But the way they worded their contract, they're always in arrears. So they can never catch up. It's an impossible number of plays, impossible number of gross to make money back for themselves.
Oh, sucks.
It's just contract. Look, Fear Factory signed a 70-30. The first worst real contract ever in metal was when Fear Factory signed with Roadrunner. Everybody knows that. They basically went on tour for free. Roadrunner took 100% of their merch, and
Jeez.
That's where all the bad...
Who would sign 100% of your merch away?
You do that once, then the record label say, now that becomes the norm. So the record labels are always going to push as far as they can go.
Yeah.
So you make one mistake, one good artist makes one mistake, everybody...
I just can't believe you'd give away 100% of merch.
That's what I said. Or I heard 70, 30, or 100. I hear...
That's usually where the artist makes most of his money.
Between 70 and 100, that's too much. So record deals right now, if you want to get a real record deal, most people are like, okay, 100% merch, no back end, and you get a small advance, so you have to pay back at such and such percent. You don't need it.
That's insane.
There's still the guys that that you need a record label in some ways. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like if you just do it slowly and manage it, and sell it, but nobody wants to do all that work.
Nobody wants to do, but that's my plan. So that's right. always been my plan since the beginning, since before I saw this coming. See, what I thought when I was a kid, I was going into the world of Judas Priest and Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
It's like, boy, you know, I cleared local, I cleared regional, I cleared national, I'm in international underground metal magazines, now I'm a solo artist in pop magazines. Boy, any day now, it's going to be like arenas. And then right when I came into like myself, that's when the internet got too open. And everybody and their grandmother became a rapper. Yeah. Everybody and their grandmother. So the market.
Everybody had a metal band.
Yeah, and the market got so saturated that booking agents, record labels, and everybody froze the money because they didn't know what to do. It's like, who do we spend on? Who do we spend on? So I've just continued on that old school path. But that's me, you know.
That's the way you have to do it.
You have to do it.
That's the only way I truly respect, because it's like that's the way I do it with my own band. It's like you have to just manage it yourself and keep it under your own thing. But a lot of artists, I feel like, I feel like there's a lot of artists that are like, well, I think I deserve more, which is totally fine. But deserving more and earning it are two different things,
right?
To me, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, and you know what? I always knew what I deserved, and always carry myself, but I knew that I had to work my way up to that reputation for everyone else.
Right.
So I know what I'm capable of. I know where I can.
So what was your first metal band?
Let's see. I had a local metal band. Then I had another one that went national, which I'd rather not mention them. No free advert for you. And then I started working with all the big guys.
That's crazy.
And I'll tell you what happened. My turning point for my career was this. Since I played fast, I got put into that Yngwie, Richie Blackmore thing. And it was cool for a while, but sometime in the early 2000s, all these Richie Blackmore frilly shirt wearing clones came out.
Yes.
And I'm like, I don't want to be that.
And Eddie still wants to be that.
Yeah, Eddie still wants
love to be
no,
that.
But I love him. I love Richie Blackmore, Yngwie, Dave Mustaine, favorite guys. Eddie Van Halen too.
Yeah.
But I was getting pigeonholed in the way I was thinking about things. So Joel and Turner had asked me to go to a concert with him in New York, because he played with a couple of guys from different bands and people from Saturday Night Live that did like this big shindig. He gave me the ride home. And I'm like, Joe, now that I have you here, you played with all the big guys and all the guys that I like growing up. Why do so many people want to be like them? And I don't want to be like them, and I don't want to be put in that hole. And he goes, kid, this is what you got to do. Whatever's on your mind, you do it. Forget the rest of them, because nobody's ever going to be them, and no one's going to ever be you. So go be a solo artist, do whatever the hell you want. And from that moment on, that's when I became a solo artist in like this weird subgenre of metal, where it's hard rock, metal, and folk.
Yeah.
I just became weird. I said, you know what? It's like taking a girdle off. I said, great. I don't got to look like these guys. Great. I don't have to sound like these guys. Great. When that happened, that's when everything took off. And everything went real well. I started charting in France. I did pop music with
solos. Like Europe metal's huge, too.
Yeah, man. But that happened when I held his opinion in high esteem. So when he told me, I go, dude, just go do your thing. Turning point.
Wow.
I was like, yeah. So I can be myself. And the material you guys are going to play today was from an album 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago came out. But that was like just trying to be bare bones, hard rock. The new album I have coming out, was Tropical Depression, is going to be all over the place. All over the place.
And what's the name? What's the significance
of the new
name?
Album? Mm-hmm. Tropical Depression. It's a pun on hurricanes and living in Florida.
Well, do we have anything from that record?
No, it hasn't come out yet.
Oh, okay. Do we have? Let's play something.
Yeah,
do
you got "Marry Me, Cindy." I think I
got. Yeah, I got that and "Bow Down."
Yeah, "Bow Down." Go. It's nice and short and has a solo.
Okay. Yeah, let's do it.
Here we go.
My way. I need to find out and change my way. My way.
Oh, yeah. Long outro. Eddie.
Nice.
That's like, that's brings me back your to, jams.
Brings
dude.
Me back to middle school.
Yeah. You were just feeling like the guitar aggro-ness yeah. of it.
Ugh.
Dude.
Miss my flannels.
We don't miss your flannels.
I do. I miss them. My back, I miss my back patch, my flannels.
So tell me, like, how did you, what was your concept behind that song? Like, what was the inspiration behind it?
So Bow Down is actually about feeling repentant and asking God for forgiveness.
Wow.
But in an aggro way, because, you know, everyone romanticizes, you know, trying to, you know, find Jesus or walk with Jesus. Usually when people turn to Jesus, it's because bad stuff has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have, you're put in a position where you have to, okay, I'm doing it wrong. It's not like, oh, hi, you know, you're really cool. I'd like you in my life.
Right.
You know, so that's what that song's about. It's about, like, being in a place where you just...
Like, fuck it.
You just can't do anything. And that's why the guitar is really aggressive. I'm a concept writer.
Hmm.
Kind of weird.
No, I like that.
Yeah.
So tell me, like, if you get a concept, you're like, you want to think of something that's
yeah.
religious, political, like, what's your vibe?
Anything that's going on.
Hmm.
So I'm one of those guys, I'll pace around. So this is this, and then talk to myself. Oh, wait, write that down, okay. And then walk away 3 or 4 months, and then all of a sudden I have a riff, and I'll put the words on. Oh, this works. And yeah, but it starts with like some sort of idea.
Hmm.
God, public comments by some political figure.
So I could have you write a song about Eddie, in theory.
I could, yes, we can.
You don't want that.
I'll spend 5 minutes with Eddie. We'll write a song about
you
Eddie.
You don't want that.
Can it be in a spooning?
Oh, spooning Eddie? No. Well, hey,
can that be the title of the song?
Let me tell you. He was talking about Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
And Iron Maiden's mascot is Eddie.
Yeah.
Dude, there it is.
I've always been drawn to Eddie.
Number of the Ed.
Yeah.
Run to the Ed.
Did you ever go to metal shows when you were younger?
I've been to Maiden a couple times, but that's about it.
Did you ever play with Iron Maiden or any of those guys?
No.
You probably toured with some crazy metal bands.
Yeah, I've gone along as entourage and friends and special guests. But
awesome.
I built my career intentionally like Floyd Mayweather.
Independent.
Independent and don't open for nobody. Top of the bill. Unless wow. it's a festival. So they say, hey, show up for yeah. Ozfest or whatever, if that's even still around. Sure, but if I'm playing Hollywood, I'm headlining.
You know, I find, yeah. like, I open weird. And I headline. I do both. But I find my favorite slots are actually the opening slots.
You know why?
The headlining slots are easier.
The
opening slots, there's more to prove.
And they're harder, too, because most people, especially Hollywood, don't yeah. want to stay out after 11
of course,
on a weeknight.
Of course.
So you have to fight once you unless they're there, they're diehard fans. Those people are going to stay for half your set. They're going to nod their head and go home.
Yeah.
So the sweet spot really is 9 to 11.
Yeah.
The mid-carders. The yeah. opening guys sometimes, you know, their girlfriends are there or people are...
But I find that it's yeah. easy to walk out on a stage,
yes.
even if the whole room's packed, you say good evening and everybody's cheering.
Yeah.
It's like, that's easy. But when you go out there and the room's half full and like you got to prove yourself and people have to stay or people like can leave or people can, you know, just not feel anything and talk, you know, that's an amazing thing to have to go up against. And I like that challenge. I actually yeah. love that challenge.
Yeah, it's it used to be for me, it used to be a requisite. I felt like I was at war with the audience.
Hmm.
And that's what I
no,
really
that's
felt
kind
like.
Of what it is.
That's
it's
really,
very
not true. Anymore. Now I'm just like, you know, whatever. I'm going right. to do my best. It comes across great.
Right.
But before you get it on, I'm always like, is everything, is the guitar okay? Is this guy standing there? Dude,
right.
you look
right.
cool. Don't slouch. You know, it's like yeah. it's like that. But once I get on the stage, I'm fine. And then after.
What about you, Eddie? What do you think about when you open? Would you rather open for a big name or would you rather headline a show?
It's easier to middle.
Why?
Because there's no expectations. And you're either remembered or immediately forgotten. Like, you remember, like, if you yeah. do well, be like, that guy before the headliner was really funny. Or if you suck, they're just, oh, they don't remember you and they just talk about the headliner. No one goes, that middle guy sucked. No one ever, no one remember. If you suck, there's no pressure. Because if you suck in the middle, people only talk about the headliner. If you're really good in the middle, people are like, that guy before the headliner was really funny.
Let me ask you an honest question for both of you guys.
Okay.
So let's say you are opening for somebody. Huge. Do you go full throttle, knowing that you could outshine them and it'll never give you the chance to open for that person again? Or do you play the game and do you do just enough that it makes you look good, but just enough to make them look better?
No, you do your best.
you do your best, you blow them out of the water.
Even when I headline, and if I'm headlining a club and the feature comes up to me, he's like, "Is there anything you don't want me to do? Can you not want me to do crowd work or anything?" I'm like, "No, do whatever you want to do. I don't care. If I can't follow you, I shouldn't be headlining."
Yes.
Right.
Yes. That's what I tell a feature, and they're like, "Oh, cool." Most headliners don't say that. I'm like, "Yeah, well, you know, whatever." They
that's
suck.
Awesome. That's awesome.
But that's what you tell them.
But that's no ego of you. You know.
Yeah, but it's also like I'm confident what I can do. I don't care what you do. Exactly. You do your job. I'll
right.
do mine.
Right. Exactly. And you already have the crowd.
Yeah.
That's the best part. But I've found that a lot of people.
If you can't follow your opener, then you shouldn't be headlining.
You shouldn't be headlining. Yes, right.
No matter what they do. I don't care if they pull rabbits out of their ass. You should be able to follow that.
That should be part of your act.
You should be able to follow anything Cadbury. The opener does.
Cadbury
yeah,
bunny.
No, I agree. So you know what I love too? There's two sides. It's like there's one side of it where I get a little like, I get a little aggro when I open for somebody.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, I want to like show no mercy. You know, and then when you're headlining and you see a great band open for you, there's that moment where it's like, damn, this band's good. And I like that. I like when there's a great opening act and you're like, man. And then you get up there and you're like almost like...
No, you want to follow good people. You want people leaving your show going, that was a great show from top to bottom. Yes. That was a great show. Not like picking different parts. Right. You're like, that was fucking awesome. I want to go see live music or live comedy again.
Yes.
Then you think like me. I'm like, okay, everybody needs to shine. I do my thing.
Yeah.
Nobody does it like
I
do.
Following
I'm
bad
fine.
Comics.
Yeah. Do your thing the best you can. I'll do my thing the best I can. Everybody sees a great show. Maybe they'll come back for a slate. Because when I grew up, we used to do a lot of VFW shows. So bands used to be like slates. There was that metal band. There was the hardcore band. There was the punk band. And there was that weird chick thing that was going on in the 90s. And they all would go from VFW to VFW doing like this little slate.
Right.
And everybody liked it. So if everyone's shown, you had more of a chance of bringing the same kids to your show. That's totally gone today.
Yeah.
It's like, you're the headliner? What makes you mad at me?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, the fact that I sell more records and people like me more than you. That's not to be mean, but right. I mean, it's like you got to know if you're coming up, come up. Take the years. Take the time. Don't try to microwave everything. It doesn't work that way, you know?
But that's the age that we live in a little bit, too.
Yeah.
It's like everybody wants the quick fix. Like,
but that's why they crash and burn, because you know life happens.
Yep.
You could have everything, every duck in a row, and you're like, oh, wow, they're about to give me a record deal, and I'm going to get this car.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden they're like, ooh, you know, music has changed, and we're going with a different genre. Sorry, bye.
Yeah. No, and I find that that acts that are like in the spotlight, too, that's a hard thing to kind of always maintain. Like you're chasing this moving target that is almost impossible to just always be ahead of the curve, you know? So some of the bands that you played shows with, festivals, just name off a couple that people that you loved, like bands that you were like, doesn't matter if they're huge or if they're not, you know, just bands that you love to play
with. Let's see. So like I said, I was always a headliner.
You're right.
When I was younger, in other bands, Typo Negative, when they were around, Crisis, when they were around. And maybe 90s like metal bands, but once I became a solo artist, I wouldn't open for anybody. I just somehow turned into a Floyd Mayweather type thinker. I'm like, no,
that's it.
Well, because it's the branding too,
right?
So I went for a certain branding. I'm like, look, I want to be a legend. I want to be a great guitar player,
right?
As far as the marketing goes,
right?
Okay, you don't do that playing, you know, opening up for Johnny what's his name at, you know,
I love Johnny what's his name.
A pub in Nashville. You have to go out there and do big things and expect big resistance.
Yeah.
So I have half of the organized metal world against me because they are so mad that I didn't take the normal road. But what they don't understand is I already paid my dues with many other bands and big acts as a songwriter.
Right.
So my solo act is, you know, Crispy and New and to
Crispy
them.
I like
Crispy and New just came out of the bun and of it as far as perception is concerned. But before I was a professional solo act, I was also in global metal bands and working for global guys,
right?
So I already paid my dues. I don't have to prove myself to Miss Facebook metal group lady.
Right.
So I have a different mentality. I'm like, I know where I belong. This is where I'm going. I'm going to take every step I can to get to where I want to go. Because I already did the tours in the back of a van.
Yeah.
Eating crackers, sleeping on someone's couch you never met.
The van tours are crazy.
They're awesome.
They're awesome.
Like Corey Feldman,
you have the best stories.
Yeah.
And like the most fun. But man, if I had to do that now, I'd be like, ooh, I don't know about you.
No, once you're an adult and you've suffered enough, then wisdom sets in and you're like, look, I don't want to have to share the van with lunatics that may kill me.
But I look back at those memories.
It's fun.
Some of those drives and the laughter and just like the stupid stories or like, the funny thing about, being a touring artist, you do experience things together with whoever you're touring with.
Yes.
Whether if you're part of the same act or you're, touring in a band or whatever, like part of the same tour, you experience things together, So there's something about that that's really magical that you look back on, you're like, those were some good times,
Yeah. Shooting up hotels.
You mean literally or figuratively?
Yeah, literally. There were BB guns, though. There weren't real bullets. But they were still shooting up hotels.
That's awesome.
There's a point where you're young and you want to be Def Leppard.
Yeah.
And you hear about everything everyone else has done.
Yeah.
And you try to emulate it.
Yes.
Oh, set the place on fire. No.
Right.
Not that, but
Well, let's play your next track. What are you going to play?
I have no idea what I sent. I sent the one I was
My Love?
My Love.
Oh, this
you
is...
You sent Eddie your love.
My Love.
My Love for Eddie. So,
before And your last name's Michelle, right?
Michelle, yes.
Michelle.
It is the Danish.
Oh, the Danish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sergio Michelle. My Love.
Go for it.
Got your metal voice,
I know.
Dude.
Metal.
I always feel like metal. Your inner voice is a metal rock god, Eddie.
I miss my long hair.
You had long hair?
Shoulder.
Yeah, that's still long.
Yeah.
Wow. You got to bring
pictures. More Kurt Cobain-ish than...
You got to send a picture. You've got...
Yeah, he's got the blue eyes and everything.
Yeah, you got to seriously...
Sound to hear.
That may have to be your new headshot.
I wish. I can't grow it that long anymore.
Why not?
The top does not grow.
Party in the front?
No. I don't want to look like Hulk Hogan. Thank you very much.
Why not? Dude, you love wrestling. I'm disappointed to hear
Let me tell
that.
You something.
I don't
brother.
Want to look
you
like Hulk Hogan.
Oh, brother. Dude, the crowd is booing, Eddie.
Keep booing. I'm not growing that hair out anymore.
Oh, seriously. Calm So where did you record the record?
Surprisingly, on my laptop.
You did the whole thing in your laptop?
The whole thing by myself, mastered
it. Did you use Logic or did you use Pro Tools?
No. What did I use for that one? I used Cubase and Cakewalk to master.
So what did you use for your guitar amps? Did you mic the guitar amps?
Yes. I used a Fender 2x12. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. With, here we go. See, endorsement plug with a Cam microphone RT1.
There you go.
Ribbon tone microphone. So what I did, everything I put in the chain was to make it sound retro. So it's a ribbon tone emulator microphone made by Cam Industries. And then I used a 2 preamp to make that a little stronger, and then I mic'd the cab with it into straight in. So I know how to fool ears. I know how to fool ears. Wow. So I want you to hear 70s.
That's crazy.
What about the drums?
The drums did myself.
You played them?
Patches.
Wow.
Pads. I did a whole album once, one hit at a time.
Damn. That's patience.
Yeah, that is patience.
That's a lot of patience.
Yep.
I don't have that kind of
patience. I know. Yeah, but that's what I get. Like I told you, I get in that maniacal kind of like evil genius thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, okay, and I'll do this, and I'll walk away for 2 months, and I'm like,
Dude. How long did it take you?
This one took me a week because I just got mad. I was sitting around. I'm like, okay, the album cover's done. Everyone knows about it. All the stores, the distro's ready. Then I heard an interview with David Lee Roth when Different Kind of Truth came out, and he goes, "Oh, we just went to the studio and we just hammered it out in a week." I said, "I can do that," and I did it.
It's ambitious.
That's it.
Love it.
Yeah, I'm easily motivated.
So you had everything set up and then made the album?
Yeah.
That's crazy. How did you do that?
Just one day I said, you know what? I'm going to track from Monday to Wednesday, and then I'm going to
But you had the album cover done before you even had a song.
Everything done.
That's
the album
crazy.
Cover, the titles, everything. I just filled in the blanks.
Wow.
Weird cat. I'm telling you, I do everything backwards.
Wow.
But it works. It works for me.
You're like, I'm going to Well, you know what? You should just like play the stadium and then bring the crowd.
Yeah, exactly. Look, dude, just do a hologram over on Hollywood.
Just break into the bowl and start playing, and then people will show up.
Yeah, if you break in, they will come.
See, I like that. Now that's metal.
That's
right?
Crazy.
Yeah.
Who are your biggest influences as far as players and bands?
Okay, let's see. Yngwie Malmsteen, Dave Mustaine, Eddie Van Halen, obviously. Apparently, Tom Waits subconsciously. Let's see. And Ann Wilson from Heart. Her phrasing.
I would not have expected you to say that.
Love her
not
phrasing.
I would have not have
really?
Looked at you and said, this guy definitely loves Heart.
Loves Heart.
Till now. What about Rolling Stones?
Oh, here's the hot topic. So for
what about Van Halen?
Yeah. Eddie.
Megadeth.
Eddie, of course. Megadeth. Yeah. Well, here's a weird thing about me. I love Urge Overkill, The Afghan Whigs, and Depeche Mode. Big time influences.
I wouldn't have thought you would listen to Depeche Mode, too.
Big time influences. They're all Beatles derivatives.
Right.
I don't like the Beatles.
Whoa.
Not into the Rolling Stones.
What?
Not into the Yardbirds. Led Zeppelin, sure.
What about Eric Clapton?
No.
Steve Ray Vaughan?
Yes.
Jimi Hendrix?
No.
No on Jimi Hendrix? Why?
Even though I sound
he's so good.
Even though I've been accused of sounding like when I play live, I do a lot of improvised wah pedal stuff.
Yeah,
I think subconsciously by listening to them, but I never gravitated to the Beatles. I gravitated to Deep Purple, so I went Deep Purple, Rainbow, Alcatraz. That was my early '60s. Even MC5, you know. But I hear the Beatles on the radio. I'm like, what do people see in this?
Wow, that's crazy. Crazy talk.
Yes, it is. But everyone that's been influenced by them directly, I love.
Yeah.
I just can't stand them.
I love them. I love them. All
I recognize stuff, the genius. I recognize the songwriting. They're talented.
I feel that way about soccer.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. Yeah, you can run.
I recognize the genius and the athleticism, but fuck, I can't stand it.
No, I can't.
Yeah, well,
I can't
the chess
that.
Of, well.
Yeah, it's not, there's nothing. Really.
And you fall down and you pretend you're hurt.
And you got some shows coming up, right?
Yes.
What are you playing?
So the 31st, I'm headlining the Whiskey A Go-Go this month.
Classic.
And June 1st, headlining the Sabin Theater in Beverly Hills.
That's going to be awesome.
Awesome. And Yngwie's the next day. So.
And who, what?
And Yngwie's the next day.
That's awesome. At the Sabin?
Yeah, so it's like Shred City that week.
Shred.
So come to see me in tent outside for him.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is there a website? You have a website and all that stuff? Or?
Yeah, SergeantMichelle.com. And if you go to any
Sergeant. Spell it out because people are dumb.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so here's the Facebook. SERGIO MICHEL MUSIC. Sergio Michelle Music. That's Facebook. Twitter is S Michelle Music. So just how I spelled it, but just S, not Sergio. SergioMichelle.com. SERGIO MICHEL reverbnation.com. Let's see what else is there. Reverb Nation is Sergio Michel. And just go into any search engine. Put my name in.
Just Google Sergio Michel.
Just Google it. It's like
that'll pop everything up.
You Googleizer.
Breezy.
Come on, girl. I'm a you Googleizer.
Google. Great quotes. Yes. I love that. Well, Sergio, thank you for being a guest. Thank you for making that on time. I was worried. I was like, man.
I made it. Who else's car blows up, has incompetent mechanics, destroying
for 12 hours.
And still makes it on time,
I'm
man.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I'm the top of the pyramid. Just relax.
Blue, you're my boy.
Well, Sergio, we're going to definitely have you back.
Will
do. You again. And on behalf of Eddie and I, we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.